But you said that Ralph spent his first 10 or 12 years in Russia, which was Poland, but it belonged to Russia, right? And he didn't get to Palestine until it became dangerous. You tell us about that.
They had to move because they were living with white Russians. Mm-hmm. And they were living, sharing a house with some military people. And so they had to move, and they moved with the white Russian army.
I see.
South, until they got to the Baltic Sea, mm-hmm. and then to the Mediterranean, and then they took a ship. By then Ralph was 12 years old. Mm-hmm. They took a ship to Haifa, and they were home.
I see. So they.
But he had never been there. His native language is Russian.
I see. And they sort of wended their way. They were like ahead of the people that were coming.
Yeah.
There where it would have been dangerous if they had caught
up. If they had stayed short. Yeah.
And you also said earlier that he thought we used to seeing Cossacks. Do you know anything about his feeling about these Cossacks?
Well, he is a little kid. He loved uniforms. He still does. Anything military, he's for it. And so I think that he liked the dash and the excitement of the horses. Mm-hmm. He always loved horses, too. So.
But he wasn't afraid of them. He didn't see them as a pogrom group or anything of that sort.
I never heard him say anything.
Okay.
I think that the pogroms were in the 1880s, so it was really bad. Mm-hmm. We had those big populations
right here
in the United States.
So he didn't have, it was really more the Russian revolution, the communists that they were fleeing from, trying to avoid. Okay. Now we're back in the United States, and he's here, and you're going to be entering the picture. Can you tell us about that time of your life?
I was a widow for 5 years. I was married to Bill Skirbel. And he died at the age of 30 from cancer. And the children were very young. They were 5 and 8, which is great. So they were. And Ralph lost his wife the year before. And he came, this is cute, he came every day after used to come over every day and come for dinner. Roseanne kept a diary.
Uh-huh.
And in the diary, she wrote all kinds of stuff. And then she started writing Uncle Ralph came for dinner.
Uh-huh.
And that's all she wrote.
Uh-huh.
No more information, just that.
Uh-huh.
Until the day we were married, then she stopped writing.
Because he moved in.
Yeah.
Were you living on White Street at 1151 White?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's always so important. And the children called her Daddy by the time they, after we came back from our honeymoon, they met us and called him Daddy, and it was just wonderful.
Probably.
It was just wonderful because they were young enough to be able to make that transition.
They were
5 and 8 when Bill died, and so 5 years later,
so
they were 10 and 13.
10 and 13.
9
well,
and
actually,
12,
that, actually that's
like.
Not young. Were lucky, you know, 5 and 8, they would be easier to adjust them than 10 and 13. But they were smart kids.
Well,
they liked him.
They liked him and they listened to him, and he wasn't taking any baloney from either one of them.
Uh-huh.
And he was strict.
Uh-huh.
And I never interfered because I figured it couldn't hurt him. And they loved it.
Yes.
If you ever have time, and you can read some of the things the kids wrote about when they spoke at the banquet, Ralph was inducted into the Hall of Fame. The children, both Roseanne and Joel, made speeches about what they remembered about him.
What Hall of Fame are you talking about?
It's the Sports Hall of Fame.
Oh, the Sports Hall of Fame. So how tell us
okay,
about your life. Right.
So he called me up one day and said, Ridley Hearts and Norbert Lucky told him to call.
Uh-huh.
So, what are you doing tonight? It's Friday. So, I'm going to the concert. well, where can I take you? I said, no, because I'm taking where I go with my son.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, where are your seats? So anyhow, he got seats nearby.
Did he?
And we met. He came to the house, and of course I wasn't ready. And Roseanne
oh,
was...
Oh, he picked you up.
Yeah, he picked me up. And Roseanne was studying her French records. So the first thing she asked him, did you want to hear my French records? So he listened to French records for a while until I got dressed. And then he and Joel and I went to the concert.
Uh-huh.
And then we took Joel for pizza
uh-huh.
and brought him home.
Uh-huh.
And then
oh.
And that was the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Did you click right away?
We met on the 13th of February.
That's
yeah,
a very romantic
yeah,
story.
Yeah, well, he's a very romantic guy. I'm always afraid that he's going to start fooling somebody. When his hands go out, I'm not sure where they're going to land.
Isn't that wonderful? That's good. So, how did you spend your time? I know you told us before that you had friends and
before I was married to Ralph?
No, when we talked about, I think we didn't get into your life with Ralph too much, but how did you spend your life? How did it go?
With Ralph.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, it was easy. We liked the same kind of things.
What kinds of things did you like?
We went to concerts, and we went to the theater,
uh-huh.
and we movies. He was a jazz buff, and I loved jazz. He knew the kids were very impressed because he would see an old movie and he'd know all of who the actors were. As I told you, he'd take Joel to the basketball games, the boxing matches, whatever.
Mm-hmm. He was how old, excuse me, when you got married?
He was 15 years old. We had a lovely home life. I even cooked in those days. I don't cook anymore, but I did cook. And I offered him the kitchen, but he didn't want to.
He didn't want to cook. He was satisfied with whatever he did.
But he just fit in perfectly and with our neighbors, and everybody got to know everybody. We had a lot of academics living on our street.
Yes.
And he was the head of the history department.
Yeah, you were a reporter.
He was a friend of mine. So he and Bill became real good friends. And Bill would have students come. He had a lot of foreign students. Ralph was just perfect for situations like that because he could handle several languages. He just understood. He didn't feel uncomfortable, like some people do feel uncomfortable when they're in a room full of foreign students, a mixture from all over the world. And he met a man there that came from Jordan. He was the harbor master or something. And when he was introduced to Ralph, he said, "Otness." I knew a Joseph Otless, surveyor.
Uh-huh.
His brother.
That's something.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way he's gone. And of course, the next year after we were married, we took a grand trip to Europe.
Did you?
For 6 weeks.
Oh, that must have been wonderful.
It was before tours.
Before what?
Before tours.
Oh, you went just the tour?
We went where we wanted to go.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
The whole thing. It was wonderful.
Where did you go?
I went to Paris, and then we went to Israel, and then we went to Italy, and to London, but we had a lot of time. We were 3 weeks in Israel, and the other 3 weeks we went to Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
Was that your first visit?
I've never been out of the country.
Is that right?
Oh.
What was it like? Tell us how you felt about Israel. How it struck you.
Well, I can still remember the first day I was there. We drove down back to Ralph's mother's apartment, and there the roads are filled with banners. There were 23 political parties. Oh. The election was the following week. It was October. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get over it. I said, what kind of country is this? They'll never get anywhere.
All
never going to get anywhere with so many political parties. And of course they hashed them and rehashed them. Everybody was talking fast and a lot.
And concerned and interested in their...
But I never learned to speak Hebrew, which was a real mistake. Roseanne wondered, and she tried to get me to go along with her. I'm not going to talk about it. I don't know why. And Ralph didn't insist. Mm-hmm. If he had insisted, I would have learned.
He didn't realize that you were going to go every year.
Did you go every year?
But they all spoke English.
That's right.
So I didn't have to learn Hebrew.
Right. That was the problem. If you had gone and they didn't speak English, you would have been forced.
Right.
She wasn't forced. Yeah.
Well, did it matter terribly?
I think they were a little hurt.
Oh, in other words,
there were remarks. Like, when are you going to learn Hebrew? Mm-hmm. Remarks. And before we were married, Moshe Charette came here to Pittsburgh to speak at the meeting. He was the foreign minister of Israel. He was a friend of
mine. Write him down. Moshe
Charette, Sharette. Came to Pittsburgh, and he came to see Ralph. And he came to get him to go back. For one of the political parties, or whatever one it was. Anyhow, he had one of his aides called up and said he was going to be in Pittsburgh. He'd be at the William Penn, he'd like to see Ralph. So Ralph brought me along. So he told me later, he said, the minute I opened the door and I saw you, I knew that my mission wasn't going to happen.
No way.
So he said, do you mind if we speak Hebrew? So the first thing he asked Ralph was, what are your intentions?
You weren't married yet?
This was in February.
Oh, okay.
And this was right, it was like our third date or something.
Okay. Okay.
But Ralph knew everybody in the government.
Did he?
Everybody. He grew up with them. And he taught them. He taught them. And he taught them.
Is that right?
You go down the street with him and he just...
So he was a factor.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I think it hurt him so much that he didn't go back at the crucial moment the state was made.
I see. So that was a sadness for him.
They used to call him from the embassy here in Washington all the time, and somebody would come in and ask him to come down. He went a couple of times, and after that, he never lost
his ties with Israel.
He maintained a very rich relationship. This is in his heart. Mm-hmm. Really.
Whom in the family did you visit when you went to Israel?
Everyone.
Who was there?
His mother, sisters, each one in a different place. Keep that in mind. There was a brother that lived in Ramadan. There was a brother that lived in outside of Tel Aviv, in Haifa, actually. And then there was a sister that lived with his mother. Then there was the next generation.
The nieces and nephews.
Were starting to be born. So his brother that lived in Haifa had three children, and we always went to Haifa because most of the family ended up in Haifa. So as time went on, they all sort of migrated to Haifa. One lived in Jerusalem, his sister lived in Jerusalem, she knew every taxi driver in Jerusalem. It was wonderful.
She was a taxi driver?
No, she knew every taxi driver.
Oh, she knew every taxi driver. Oh.
that by, is by name. And they knew her.
And you could really get around.
She was really something else. Uh-huh. She had the children here. She had children there by herself. She took them places that she wouldn't dare take, wouldn't take us.
Is that right?
Underground rock joints.
And is that right?
She took them to all kinds of
she was places. With it, she was a with it lady. She was, which she which was sister was that?
This is her sister.
And her
sister,
name?
Anya.
Anya.
She was the head of the tourist bureau in Jerusalem. So, where was I? I got lost again.
We're trying to get a picture of your life with Ralph.
Well, it's, I guess he lived for the next trip.
Is that right?
I really think so. And I knew we wouldn't go anywhere else. Mm-hmm. We tried always to go just one place. I like to go one place to unwind.
After
go to Israel first, and then go to London or Paris or someplace.
Was it? How was it for you to be visiting all these families?
Well, I got used to them, and I guess they got used to me. They were very cordial, very nice, very loving. And of course, when you go to a foreign country with somebody like Ralph, you don't have to speak the language.
No,
you know, he does everything.
Sure.
That's why I want to go to Russia.
Right. So you were given a warm welcome.
Yes.
And
they
it wasn't
were
hard.
Nice. They were
moving around. And
I have some letters that his brother wrote to him after our trip. And then the last letter that he wrote before we got married, he asked him, he said, I don't know the tone of your letters. Who's this widow that you were that you're telling me about? He said, well, I'm expecting a good word from you. And we were very close this to him.
That's nice.
They had a house, Noah Design.
Is that right?
He was an engineer, but he could be an architect,
he
too.
He was a talent. He had an art and an aesthetic sense.
He designed that house, and it was a wonderful house. The first time I walked in it, I couldn't believe it. It was like a ranch house.
Exactly.
You
could
just see all over the place here.
Exactly.
You go in, and the bathroom is right near
the
front
door.
And then there's the living room, and then there's some steps go up to a couple of bedrooms upstairs, and the kitchen's back there.
So it was comfortable.
Yeah. It was great. My sister-in-law still in the house.
I was just going to ask you, does he have any family living there now?
Oh, sure.
Brothers,
everybody,
sisters?
None of his siblings, but then the next generation.
Is there?
And I think it's for the fifth generation.
Is that right?
And everybody's there, but his brother's two children, his daughter, Noah's daughter married a bit of service in Toronto, so she lives. And his son was married twice and divorced and is floating around. Very bright guy who can't find himself.
Tough.
Yeah, at the age of 25, he's still looking incredibly bright. But he was a paratrooper. He had a long, good history of service. And so, those two were out of the country, but the others all had, his sister had one son, and he's a doctor, he's retired, he was a urologist in Haifa, and he has two children, a son and a daughter, and they have two children, so you see it's getting...
That would be his sister's grandchildren, or so. Or maybe more. Right, her son was a doctor.
Yeah, and then the grandchildren are the parents of
the babies. That's a long, long line.
Yeah. And then there's another, then the his nephew, Amos, who's in Haifa, is a son of Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
And he has three girls, and they're not, two girls and a boy. They're not married. His son was a pilot, but he's out of the army now. He has his own business. And then there's another. Thomas has a sister, Rhea, who has three boys. And Rhea and her husband are here in this country now. They're at Blackburn College in Virginia. He's a world famous agronomist.
That's a world famous school, isn't it? For
And he comes to this country pretty often.
Uh-huh.
He knows all the school colleges.
How about Ralph's honors and awards? We have to talk about them.
Uh,
sports.
This is one of them. I wear it just to connect.
It's on your collar.
Have it on.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. This is one of his medals. From this was a medal that was given to him after the war. He has medals from the British Army. This one's an Israeli medal. Service before the war.
I see. But it came to him after.
Yeah, but it
fell through.
He got it when he was there. They had a ceremony.
And he was honored by the Sports Hall of Fame. Can you tell us about that?
That was really exciting.
I can imagine.
It was, he had just gotten over a hip replacement.
Oh, my.
When
was
this?
This was
1991. In the fall of 91. And I was just getting over a cardiac surgery.
Oh, my.
So I said, could you wait till next year? And he said, no. So we did it, and we had a wonderful time. The kids came, and all the grandchildren came. It was just
where was it?
It was at Bechtel.
At Bechtel. Was this a Jewish?
The Jewish sports.
I think I read about it in the Chronicle.
They have it every year.
Uh-huh.
And they pick four or five or six people.
This is the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame of Pittsburgh or National or
Western Pennsylvania.
Western Pennsylvania. Okay, I didn't know what area we were talking about.
And it was because of his boxing. What kind of event was it?
It was one of those wild Jewish events.
Noisy.
Crowded.
Was it a dinner?
It was a dinner. Nice, very nice dinner. There were cocktails first, and then there was a dinner, and everybody was roaming around all the time. Nobody sat still.
Uh-huh.
And Ralph was in a wheelchair.
Oh.
Because he just got over his hip operation.
Oh, my God.
No. So he made his speech sitting in a wheelchair. Whereas Ann and Joel were up on the pulpit, or whatever it is, their stage. They made their speeches and introduction. And it was wonderful, really wonderful speeches. Interest in athletics.
And there were other men.
There were five other men that day, and a woman. And it was, I think her name was Fink. She was in Rosine's class at Alderdice. She's a paraplegic.
Oh,
an automobile accident.
Dee Dee Fink.
Oh, mom.
What is her
name?
Dee Dee Fink.
Yeah, friends with her.
Terrific. Terrific girl.
Is that right?
And she's got the more life in her than the whole rest of the bunch put together.
Isn't
she's
amazing.
Really peppy. And she was wonderful. She was one of the honorees.
Also one of the honorees. So it was a good group.
Yeah. Oh, it was. It was a very exciting.
And you all enjoyed it.
And everybody. Oh, it was just wonderful. I had to get him there in a wheelchair. I had to rent a van with a driver that had a lift in it.
Sure.
Get the lift. And then Joel said, he can't go by himself. You can't push him. So he called up some agency, nursing agency, and ordered a male nurse who arrived about 3 hours early and helped him to get dressed.
That
and stayed great. With him and took him to the bathroom. Oh, that was great.
So it made a very nice, relaxing evening. Right. Okay, so that was a high point. Is there anything else that we should know about?
I'll remember more for sure. Ralph's a painter, too.
Is he a painter? Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah.
She just checked her notes.
I saw Harmerville art, and it reminded me that Ralph was a painter.
Well, tell us. That's good.
I did an art show for Harmerville. But,
what's his medium?
Well, he painted whatever came along, and he really had talent. After we were married, he went to Carnegie Museum. And he took courses in drawing and in painting. And we had them all on our third floor, and I don't know what happened to them, where they went. I guess maybe the children took them because they didn't want to throw anything. And I don't throw anything. Anyway.
That's good.
They had,
did he work in oil or watercolor?
Watercolor. Sometimes he had his own paints, and his own easel. He was in business.
And he enjoyed it.
He loved it. And And we took classes together at Pitt. Mm-hmm. We took a couple of jazz classes.
Did you?
These kids are so, this was like 15 years ago. They don't know a thing. They didn't know geography.
You mean your children?
No, these kids are in the jazz class.
Oh, was it discouraging?
It was to me. I thought, how can this professor keep talking to these idiots that just don't seem to grasp it? He's talking about the Newport Jazz Festival, and I asked where it is, and they said Virginia.
They said Virginia. The Newport News.
But it's Newport, Rhode Island.
Sure, but they were thinking probably of Newport News. Right. College kids.
Students.
Oh, I thought you went to an adult class.
Oh,
and, you know,
it's not the students.
Oh, it's scary.
Oh, it sure is. But he liked that.
I think maybe what's made him so interesting and outstanding is his dual kind of citizenship. His being
really wasn't.
Oh, a Renaissance man. Okay. Well, that's really a wonderful compliment.
Yeah.
He had a mathematical and engineering mind, and he painted, mm-hmm. and he liked theater and art. And that's
just, he
wonderful.
Just did everything. He had good taste. He knew what was right and what was wrong. He was the most honest person I ever met.
The most honest, was he?
Just honest.
Wonderful compliment.
He just would go halfway. It was all or nothing.
And he stepped into what I think Ruth and I think could be a terribly difficult situation of becoming a father to your children.
That's what he wanted.
And he did a wonderful job.
Well, he started out as a stepfather of preteens, which is the toughest, but he became a father.
Yeah, and that's a real achievement, I think.
Our next door neighbor worked in the library, so she got Joel a job over the weekends to work there. Ralph wouldn't let him work on Friday night.
Is that right?
It was a battle. He gave in.
He wanted him home for a Sabbath.
Had to be home Sabbath night.
Oh, you have to tell us about that. Observed the Sabbath.
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell us about your Jewish ops, you know, your religious life at home.
Ralph taught me to speak enough Hebrew to do the candles and the bread. And then after a while, everybody took turns doing it. But we never went out on Friday.
Oh, I
never. We went home, and he insisted that the children be home. And the next thing that came along after the library job was that we would go to the movies on Friday.
Right.
And it took a little doing, but they understood. That's the way it should be.
And you would have a Sabbath dinner.
Oh, it was always the same. It was once a bowl of soup and chicken. And
I think it's
fabulous.
It was
always the same.
If it ain't broke,
they knew what they were getting.
And you made that dinner every
Saturday.
Every
Saturday night, every Friday night. And then that was when we had company too.
Is that
right? Our friends would come with their children.
Uh-huh.
And we celebrated all the holidays, and usually it was our friends who came to our house to celebrate. Like Hanukkah. Passover, crowds for everything.
I think that's horrible.
It was, and we had this thing, Ralph being the lover boy that he is, looked around the table one day, and there's Eugene Cohen with his wife and three daughters.
Uh-huh.
And so he said, well, it's a privilege of the house. I always got a kiss after he said some of the prayers. And then he said, but it's a privilege of the house to be able to kiss everyone. So we would walk around the table and kiss everybody, and then the children, then Joel would walk around and kiss everybody. And he'd say, come on, Eugene, it's your turn to go around and we make that. So we did that all the time. We had so much fun.
It was very joyous.
And, always wonderful. The Passovers were such fun.
Did you attend temple?
Sure.
You belong to temple?
Oh, yeah.
Did you go to services regularly?
Yeah.
Every, what, Saturday morning?
Sometimes. No. We went to... Sometimes, but not really.
You didn't get up every Saturday morning and go.
No.
How about the children? Did they go to? Oh, go ahead.
They did.
Yeah,
because they had to.
They went to Sunday school.
But he just did. He just didn't think that Rabbi Sholem was Jewish. Mm-hmm. Not that he was so Jewish, because he wasn't. He got along with Gentile people better than he got along with some Jewish people. Mm-hmm. He seemed to understand them better. Mm-hmm. But he said the first time he saw it, of course, he saw it when Gertrude was alive. He said, well, he's reminded of a cathedral. But he got used to it, and he got to know the rabbis, and they all knew him. Rabbi Jacob comes to see him every couple of weeks.
Does he?
But Rabbi Pye comes almost every week.
Does she?
She loves him.
Does she?
Yeah, she gives him a little hug.
Where is he?
He's in her heritage.
Well, that's, and she comes regularly. That's
with the baby. She brought the baby.
The baby's adorable. The
baby adorable.
Would it be painful for you to tell us about his illness?
It's something that developed. It was like a. Now they call it Alzheimer's. But in the beginning, the doctor didn't call it that. It was just a loss of memory, a little confusion. And he knew it. He got to the point where he wouldn't pick up the phone at the top because he was afraid that he wouldn't say the right words. Words wouldn't come out.
I thought he had a stroke.
He did. Oh. Then he had a stroke. After this started, about 3 years after this started, he went to every class that you could dream of in every hospital in Pittsburgh to take memory lessons, courses, and anything that had to do with
mental stimulation. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then he had a stroke.
And then he had a stroke, and he just fell out of bed one day. Mm-hmm. The hospital, and not going to live in Saturday. He's going to live for the weekend. That was 2 years ago.
He has a strong constitution.
So
he's been
he kept drifting. He never knew where he was. He never wanted to go home. He never fussed about anything. It wasn't because he liked it. He just didn't know.
He didn't know what to change.
So we brought him home. We had him home for Seder this year.
Oh, okay.
And if you asked him the next day, he'd say, very nice, but we didn't know what he was saying. But he looked around a lot. Like he might have seen something a little familiar, but he never talked about it. It's really
difficult,
terrible
time
for a waste of a brain like his.
Right.
So that's.
Well, he's made an impact. There's no question about it.
And I tell you what else he used to do in Pittsburgh. Did I tell you that he used to teach Hebrew at the Aaron Pumpkin
Center?
No,
you didn't tell us that.
And when he was in college here.
Mm-hmm.
He was teaching up on the hill at the Iron Cotton Center. On the hill.
Okay. The Iron Cotton Settlement, I guess.
Settlement.
That's right.
Yeah,
Didn't he go there to teach?
He went there to play basketball,
okay.
And he went there to box, and he went there to teach.
Uh-huh. He always gave of himself, it seems to me.
He liked doing that. He would have been a good teacher. He was offered a position at Pitt as an assistant in the Russian department. he kept saying, I don't know how we'll live, and I don't know, I can't do it because I won't have any income. And he should have done it. We would have managed something.
It would have been something
we managed.
He
would have been good at it, and he would have loved to do it.
The only thing, I don't know him at all. I've seen him, but I really don't know him. But I just had this impression that he's a man that has a very fine reputation. That's just the feeling, and I think probably that's what's true about him.
I know that's why a lot of people don't even, they don't even ask me about him. Mm-hmm.
Too
they
painful.
It's so hard for them. A couple of people told me they went to see him, like Sam Green, who was his boss for all these years. Told me he went to see him, and he couldn't stand it.
Too painful. Is there any? Is there anything else you did that we haven't talked about that you can think of? Anything you want to cover?
Joel telling about how Ralph set up a family bowling league. Well, the powerful parents of the Mighty Miners. We would go every Sunday morning to, when they weren't in Sunday school, or Sunday afternoon, to Craig Street.
I know.
Where the bowling alley used to be?
Right, I do. I still have the name of that bowling alley. It wasn't the Stress. I remember.
I still have the book where he kept the records.
Did he really? What fun
so
for everybody.
So ridiculous. I had a ping pong before he was great at. He wasn't so good at it.
But
he had a ping pong table in the up on the third floor.
And he
loved the health club.
Oh, that did he?
He joined the health club as soon as we were there. And he went there every Thursday and night out or something.
What, they swam and they played handball and things like that?
Whatever it was, he did exercise machines.
He enjoyed that kind of life. He was
an athlete.
Right. And he was a cultured man. Anything else, Paula? If you think of anything, would you call us? We'll add it. Can you think of anything? Do you think we covered it all?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we've been okay.